the world, animals are turning up in strange and unexpected places.
A bear in a card shop.
It's happening more and more, and millions of us are now sharing videos like these. I'm Lucy Cook, and as a zoologist, I want to understand what's going on.
Ooh, not too close now.
So I'm turning detective.
I literally wouldn't have believed it unless I saw it with my own eyes.
I'll be tracking down animals who are showing up thousands of miles from their natural homes.
Hold the tail!
Hold the tail, hold it as
Seriously?
Hard as you can.
Seriously?
Yeah, go on.
Oh my God!
And other animals who are showing up right on our doorsteps. And I'll reveal new science that uncovers how, as we change the world, animals are starting to do the strangest things.
So just what is it about these animal opportunists that allows them to thrive in such unexpected places?
BBC, Animals Unexpected.
I'm going to start by investigating a bunch of animals that have been moved around the planet by us, but have somehow got loose where they don't belong. Meet the escape artists.
An animated finger points to the words escape artists.
First, I'm heading to Colombia, 200 miles from the capital Bogota, where I've heard about an escape so strange I could barely believe it. This remote, rural area is way off the beaten track. Luckily, no expense has been spared on my transportation.
She's in a three-wheeled tuk-tuk, bumping along a dirt track.
Bizarrely, I've come to South America to find an iconic African animal.
She's walking behind a man along a riverbank. A hippo rears up out of the water, opening its mouth wide before plunging back down. Then it slowly sinks beneath the water again.
I can't believe it's a wild hippopotamus! In Colombia, 10,000 kilometres from home. Hippos are one of those iconic African animals, like lions and wildebeest. If you see them, then you know you must be in Africa.
The hippo's head appears again.
But we're not in Africa. We're in Colombia.
A bird's eye view of a winding river.
Hippos are supposed to be found throughout sub-Saharan Africa. They can weigh up to 3 tons and are highly territorial. Their aggressive nature and massive bulk have led to a fearsome reputation as Africa's most dangerous mammal. So what on earth are they doing in South America? Well, it's an unlikely story involving one of the world's most infamous drug barons, Pablo Escobar. In the 1980s, it's said he controlled 80% of the world's cocaine trade from this ranch, known as Hacienda Napolis. This was his private playground. It's now been turned into a most unconventional theme park and ramshackle museum dedicated to his life.
This is totally surreal.
Escobar created a dinosaur park for his son with life-size dinosaurs. And he even built his very own private zoo. In a way, only a billionaire drug baron could.
So legend has it that Pablo Escobar got his hands on a massive Russian cargo plane, which he then flew to Africa, filled with illegal wildlife. He then had to get the plane and its contents back to Colombia before they woke up. And he landed it here at the Hacienda and even had to extend the runway because the plane was so big it couldn't land.
Amongst his menagerie, Escobar imported 4 hippopotamus. three females and one very excitable male. Nature took its course. Soon there were hippo babies. One of them still lives in the Hacienda Zoo. I've been granted an audience with Vanessa, who's one of the offspring of Pablo's original hippos. She likes carrots, and apparently she even responds to her own name. She's that tame. Vanessa! Carrots! Whilst Pablo Escobar was alive, all the hippos were fenced into the grounds of his ranch. But in the early 1990s, he was killed.
Vanessa chomps on the carrots.
When Pablo was shot, all the animals in his menagerie were rehoused to zoos around South America, apart from the hippos, because nobody really knew how to transport an animal that weighs the same as a family car. So they stayed here. With Escobar dead and the ranch abandoned, many of the hippos broke loose. And now these giant African mammals are running riot in rural Colombia. Local cowboys tell me the hippos have trampled cows to death and people have had to run for their lives. Luckily, no one's been injured. But as these amateur videos from Africa show, hippos are fast and dangerous. If threatened, they can charge at 20 miles per hour.
A hippo running out of water.
So the Colombian authorities are rightly worried about their 3-ton escape artists. Wow, you can hear them. Biologist David Lopez is taking me to see one of the largest groups, or pods.
Look at them.
There's so many of them. Is this safe? Can we get this close?
Until here, it's safe.
Right. Okay. Are you sure about that?
Look at them. Yes. This is a female with a baby.
She's looking at us. Oh, she's looking at us. I feel like being eyeballed by a dozen hippos. No one's exactly sure how many hippos there are now in Colombia. There could be up to 60. This lush corner of South America is a far cry from their natural home.
A bird's eye view of a meandering river in Africa.
In Africa, a hippo's life is tough. They have to survive extreme droughts where water and food are really scarce. There's fierce competition. And predators.
A crocodile.
But for Colombian hippos, life's easier. The climate here means there's year-round water and all the vegetation they could possibly eat. They must really like it here.
They don't have competitors. Mm. They don't have predators. They don't have stress.
They've adapted well to new conditions and now even changed their behaviour. They've become very randy. In Africa, female hippos don't start breeding until they're around 10 years old. But here, they're starting as young as 3 and having babies much more frequently. Now the population is growing fast and spreading. Hippos have been spotted 150 miles from the hacienda. Hippos are one of the most famous African animals, but I reckon they might actually prefer this corner of South America. Colombia, as unlikely as it seems, is a hippo paradise. And if these hefty escape artists continue to breed successfully, they may over time change and become a distinct subspecies. A seriously unexpected legacy for an infamous drug baron.
A hippo rears out of the river, snorting water from its nostrils and waggling its ears. Now a plane coming into land.
And as us humans move stuff around the planet more and more, stories of escaped animals setting up home in foreign lands are happening with increasing regularity. In the UK alone, 10 new species arrive each year from around the world. There are now Australian wallabies living on the Isle of Man after they bounce free from a local zoo. And these wild scorpions live in southern England. Stowaways that arrived on a ship from the Mediterranean over 100 years ago. And we now have ring-necked parakeets from Asia and Africa. One legend has it, a pair originally escaped from a film set near London. And now there are more than 30,000. And they're probably the UK's fastest-growing bird population. These escape artists have brought a touch of the exotic to British wildlife. But in mainland Europe, another wild escapee has recently sneaked into one of the busiest cities. I'm travelling to Germany to investigate stories of a curious-sounding creature that's apparently living in Berlin in large numbers.
Crowds around the Brandenburg Gate.
They're known locally as Waschbären, or wash bears. There have been reports of these wash bears all over central Berlin, including here at the Brandenburg Gate, and they've even been spotted riding the subway.
A furry face sniffing right up to a night camera. Now Lucy's travelling on a train.
I've never heard of a creature called a wash bear, so I'm travelling to a nearby gardening college in the district of Wedding, where they've recently been spotted. Teacher Helmut Kruger Danielson has had a close encounter.
Then there was a hole in the ceiling, and someday there was a face, and he or she, I don't know, look there, and I was like, hello, Helmut, how are you?
Helmut had come face to face with a wash bear. So I'm on the trail of these elusive escape artists. I'm setting up a series of surveillance cameras around the garden that I'm leaving to run overnight. And returning the following morning to check the cameras with biologist Dr. Frank Dreigala. Here we go. Okay, let's have a look at this clip here. Oh.
Okay. A badger.
We got something, but it was a badger. Normally, I'd be really excited to see a badger, actually, but not on this occasion. Oh! That's a raccoon! So that's what a wash bear is. But I literally wouldn't have believed it unless I saw it with my own eyes.
That's a nice shot.
That's fantastic! Yep. There really are raccoons in Berlin. This is truly unexpected, because these animals are at least 4,000 miles from home. They should be in North America.
A raccoon prowling through a forest.
Raccoons are nocturnal mammals, normally found in the forest across the United States. Their bandit-like masks are believed to give them better night vision. As our cameras show, they certainly seem to be seeing their way around Helmut's garden without any difficulty. So this is the camera trap that's down by the compost heap. And there's a veritable raccoon party going on.
Yeah.
There's three raccoons. If there are eight or so raccoons just in this area, how many do you think there are in Berlin?
Nobody counts them, but if you think about the records in the last years, I guess, rough estimation, 600 to 1,000 in Berlin.
Wow! But how did they come to be in Germany in the first place? They certainly couldn't have swum the Atlantic.
Lucy walks across a bridge.
Well, just before the Second World War, a handful of raccoons were imported to Germany to be farmed for their fur. Then this happened.
Old film of a warplane.
A Russian airstrike damaged the farm, allowing the raccoons to break free and make their very own great escape. With the escaped raccoons on the run, they needed to adapt quickly to this new and foreign land. Raccoons are opportunists. They'll eat almost anything they can get their paws on, from eggs to insects. Their excellent memories allow them to map out where and when food is available. And because they feed at night, they rely on their deft and sensitive paws to find food in pitch darkness. So memory and dexterity have given them an edge in their new home. To show you what I mean, I'm meeting a tame raccoon with a fitting name.
A raccoon standing on its hind legs and sniffing the air.
So this is Rascal, the raccoon. And I've got a little test for Rascal that's going to demonstrate how amazing she is at using her paws, which are a bit like human hands in that they're very sensitive and very dexterous. And that's the secret to their success. So I've got a test for you, Rascal. Are you up for a test?
Rascal's furry face and whiskers.
This tunnel has three separate compartments, each with a different type of lock that Rascal must use her paws to open. Each time she gets through, there's a small vegetable-based treat for her. This last gate is going to be Rascal's biggest challenge because she's going to have to stick her arm through the door and unlock it using only a sense of touch. So let's see how Rascal gets on.
She approaches the first chamber.
Come on, Rascal, you can do it.
She manages to lift up the Perspex door.
With ease.
She fumbles with the latch for the door to the second chamber, but manages to turn it upright and lift the Perspex door.
Well done, Rascal. Through number two. Now number three. Now this one's tricky. Problem solving like this requires real brain power. But then raccoons are as smart as some monkeys. And research has shown they can even remember how to open different locks after more than a year. But has this lock foxed Rascal? Come on, Rascal, you can do it. Gosh, it's amazing how they use those hands. Yay! Now, this final one, of course, she can't actually see. So she's relying purely on her sense of touch. Raccoons' paws are packed full of sensory receptors, and the part of their brain that processes this information is much larger than in most mammals. Wow. Rascal, take a bow. That's seriously impressive. It's this winning mix of dexterity and intelligence that's enabled raccoons to find plenty of food, even in a completely foreign land. They can open bins, feed on rubbish, even break into our homes. But one mystery remains. Why do the Germans call raccoons wash bears? This amateur footage reveals the answer. These nimble-fingered mammals are often seen washing their food in water. This behaviour gave rise to the name wash bear. And now raccoons and their fastidious habits are spreading fast. There could be up to 1 million in Germany, with other populations springing up across the continent from France to Russia. These sneaky North American mammals are certainly taking Europe by storm. Animal escape artists show that as we move species around the world, they can adapt and change. But it's not just foreign creatures turning up in unexpected places. Across the world, our towns and cities are ever expanding, encroaching into the wilderness. That means many native animals are starting to turn up on our doorsteps. Meet the doorsteppers.
An animated finger points to the words doorsteppers.
Home videos of wild animals in towns and gardens are turning up more and more on the internet.
Oh my goodness.
Fancy sharing a pool.
Oh my goodness.
With a half-ton adult moose? There are some wild animals that we've now accepted as part of our new urban ecology, like squirrels and foxes. But in America, people are getting used to living alongside a much bigger and potentially more dangerous doorstepper, the black bear. They'll stop at nothing to get their paws on food. Look
for the bear. A bear leaning over a wall to open the lid of a wheelie bin, then another wandering the aisles of a supermarket. Now a bear with its head inside a freezer in a kitchen, then another sitting at a picnic table, nibbling at the contents of a basket.
And once full up, they seem happy to just chill out. They seem almost human. But what's most amazing is how the new suburban lifestyle is changing the black bear to be more like us.
A bear amidst shrubs.
In the wild, they can feed for up to 20 hours a day on berries and shoots to get the calories they need. But our food scraps offer them a high-calorie, fast food alternative. That means, just like us, black bears are getting fat. Bears in towns are up to 30% heavier than those in the wild.
Bears on the back of a pickup truck.
And as we know, young cubs learn urban survival skills from their mums. Over time, these black bears will become increasingly street smart. But our towns and cities aren't just home to sneaky scavengers. Incredibly, top predators have recently been spotted hunting our streets.
A leopard chases a man.
Opportunistic leopards are drawn to cities to hunt goats and stray dogs.
The leopard jumps between two buildings.
But it's bringing them into conflict with people.
Home footage of the leopard running amok.
In America, a mountain lion has been spotted in LA. This incredible photo looks like a scene from a Hollywood movie, but it was recently taken by a remote camera. But now I'm heading to New York City in search of a more mysterious top predator.
Home footage of what looks like a wolf.
Wolf-like creatures have been spotted on the streets of Manhattan, sparking a major police chase.
A full moon.
Howls are haunting the night of one of the busiest cities on Earth.
Skyscrapers and busy streets.
So what are these large predators that have found a place amongst the 8 million people in New York?
When you look at the footage, it's clear it's too small to be a wolf, yet it's too big to be a fox or a coyote. What it is, in fact, is a coy wolf, which is a hybrid, a part coyote, part wolf.
Wolves are top predators. They hunt in packs. Long legs mean they run fast, and powerful jaws can crunch through bone.
A pack feeding on a dead animal.
Western coyotes are smaller and wilier opportunists, scavenging everything from carcasses to fruit. So how did the hybrid coy wolf come about? Well, bizarrely, it's actually a species we humans helped to create. Because as we hunted grey wolves through much of the United States, the smaller western coyote was able to venture north. When they arrived in Canada in the 1930s, they encountered another species of wolf, and they bred. This was the birth of the coy wolf, also known as the eastern coyote, as they're found across the eastern United States.
A coy wolf stalking through the grass.
It's fascinating. She's a lot more wolfish than a regular coyote. She's bigger, and that face is a lot broader, and she's taller, generally taller and a bit more imposing than a regular coyote. It makes me wonder how much of an advantage this mixture gives them trying to survive in a place like New York.
Dr. Mark Weckl has been tracking the coy wolves' journey and their recent arrival in the Big Apple, doorstepping us in the heart of the city. Latest reports are from the Bronx.
I mean, the Bronx is blessed with really big, beautiful parks, but as soon as you step beyond that, you're talking about huge apartment buildings, really dense streets, a lot of people. This is urban as it gets.
It's those parks that have been crucial. Small patches of woodland amongst the urban sprawl. And this is where the coy wolves hide away. Mark's cameras have captured rare footage of them.
This is from the Bronx?
This is all from the Bronx.
Wow!
So what could a pack of coy wolves be feeding on in this urban jungle? A heat-sensing camera reveals a plentiful food source.
Well, there's what the coy wolves are here for. There's just loads of rats. They say you're never more than 3 feet away from a rat in New York, and I'm only about 3 feet away from about 20 of them by the looks of things. It's just alive with them.
New York's coy wolves are also known to eat mice, squirrels, and rabbits. The wooded parks provide shelter during the day when New York is at its busiest. It's after dark that coy wolves usually hit the streets. To do that, they have to be smart and opportunistic.
Intelligence is learning to live with us and avoid us at the same time. These are the ones active at night. These are the ones that if they have to go out beyond the park are doing so when they know the streets are deserted.
These ones in the Bronx here that we don't see.
Right.
They're the successful ones.
Exactly.
The New York skyline at night.
New York's coy wolves show how even top predators are adapting to live successfully alongside us. It's another extraordinary example of how city life is changing animals. We've seen how bears are getting fatter, and new evidence suggests some rodents are evolving bigger brains to cope with this hectic new world. Our fast expanding cities seem to be driving rapid evolution in those species that are able to thrive in them.
It is incredible to think that there are wild coy wolves living here in the heart of New York City, because generally humans and top predators do not get along. But maybe it's this mixture of wolf and coyote that have helped it survive. And let's face it, if it can make it here, it can make it anywhere.
It's up to you.
The coy wolf prowling. Speeded up film of a busy New York road, then a coy wolf howling. The Statue of Liberty, then a bear leaning over a wall to open the lid of a wheelie bin.
But it's not just opportunistic doorsteppers adapting to modern human landscapes. Other super specialist animals are now using us for much more specific purposes. To do this, they're taking over our buildings in truly unexpected ways. Meet the animal squatters.
An animated finger points to the word squatters.
The first animal squatter is found deep in the mountains of northern Italy. The location is so remote, I need a helicopter to get there. But it sounds so bizarre, I have to see it for myself.
This is the biggest wilderness area in the whole of the Alps. But strangely, there is still a big man-made structure hidden amongst all of this wild beauty.
And it's a truly unexpected place to find wild animals.
A dam.
Cingino Dam. A vast hydroelectric power plant.
Wow!
At more than 40 metres, it's taller than a 12-storey building.
The gently curving steep stone wall of the dam.
Its wall is near vertical, around 85 degrees at the top. Surely nothing can scale this.
Animals walking up the wall.
Wow, that's a mountain ibex. Sort of stuck like a fly on flypaper to this dam. That's insane.
It's a mother and her four-month-old kid casually scaling the near vertical wall.
They're famous for being really good climbers, but that's something else. That is really extraordinary.
An ibex calmly makes its way across the near vertical slope.
These two aren't just lone daredevils. There can be up to 20 alpine ibex plastered to the dam wall at any one time. But curiously, it's only ever mothers and their young. For some reason, larger males don't make the climb. So why are they doing it? And why don't the males join them? It can't be for food, because the wall is bare apart from a few sprigs of vegetation. But there's a clue in their behaviour.
As bizarre as this might seem, it looks like they're licking the dam.
But why? Well, there's only one way to find out.
Lucy licks the wall.
It's salty. That's what they've come here for. They've come for the salt.
So the concrete used to make this giant dam strong enough happens to have lots of salt in it. And because the ibex's vegetarian diet is very low in salt, they make these death-defying climbs to get their mineral fix.
Well, that makes total sense, because all animals crave salt. Without it, your nerves and muscles don't function properly. And it's especially important for mums when they're feeding their young. So maybe that's why you only see females and their kids on this dam.
An ibex picking its way across the wall.
Other animals get their minerals from natural sources known as salt licks. In Kenya, elephants travel deep into caves in pitch darkness to excavate salt from the walls. And in Peru, scarlet macaws dig special minerals for indigestion relief.
A macaw chips at a rock with its sharp beak.
But Italy's alpine ibex are scaling new heights. And that's no mean feat.
Lucy climbs the foot of the wall.
There's just nothing, nothing to put your feet on.
But that's no problem for alpine ibex or other climbing goats, because they have evolved built-in climbing shoes. Their split hooves act like pincers, enabling them to grip on the narrowest of ledges.
An ibex on a steep, rocky wall.
Alpine ibex are so sure-footed, no one has ever seen one fall off the dam. Their amazing hooves have allowed them access to a completely unique source of salt.
This dam was built to provide power for the local people, but it's also inadvertently provided the resident ibex with the world's biggest man-made salt lick.
Drawing back from the towering stone wall of the dam. Now a bird's eye view of an oil platform.
Strangely, ibex aren't the only animal squatters taking advantage of our giant power facilities. Way out in the oceans, oil rigs offer a welcome stopover for more than 200 species of migrating birds, including short-eared owls travelling between Scandinavia and the UK. And I've heard about a place in Florida where another giant man-made building is helping to actually save a rare species. This is a manatee, a shy and endangered sea mammal, solitary for much of the year. So why are hundreds of them gathering around this power station near Miami? This is just one of 10 different coal-fueled stations that manatees visit around the Florida coastline. West Indian manatees are mainly found in the tropics. In winter, their northerly limit is Florida. They've been around for more than 45 million years, but loss of their natural habitat has now made them endangered in Florida. I want to find out why these ancient creatures are flocking to power stations. To do that, I need to see them close up in more natural conditions. So it's about 6 o'clock in the morning and I'm looking for manatees, which is a lifetime ambition. I love these animals, so I am super excited.
She points.
Look! It's a mother and a calf.
She jumps into the water in her snorkeling gear.
At these springs, the manatees are used to humans, and I'm allowed to swim amongst them.
She swims near a mother and her calf.
The first thing I notice is their vast size. These are gentle giants. But their massive bulk isn't because they're fat. Manatees have an enormous gut that produces an excess of gas. They use it to regulate their buoyancy, along with huge, elongated lungs. So unlike other large marine mammals, manatees only have a very thin layer of insulating fat. This means they really feel the cold. It's so critical, if the water temperature drops below 17 degrees Celsius, they can die of hypothermia. That was amazing. They're like inflated seals. They're just these massive, buoyant blimps that are incredibly serene. So these chilly manatees have to find warm water in winter. Historically, they'd all gather around natural hot springs like these on the Crystal River. The trouble is, as Florida's human population has expanded, we've built over many of their old winter refuges. They share this space with humans. I kind of expected them to be living in the wilderness in their natural home, but no. There's loads of houses about. So ironically, as our buildings have pushed manatees out of their natural homes, they found refuge in one of the most unnatural places on Earth. Power stations. The warm water outflow from the cooling towers keeps the temperature in this lagoon at a bath-like 24 degrees Celsius. These great polluting carbuncles have thrown a lifeline to these endangered sea mammals. Astonishingly, 80% of Florida's manatees now visit power stations during the winter. When they're eventually closed down, it's feared many manatees will die. But for now, power plants are a vital refuge. So much so, rehabilitated manatees are even released here.
A team of people carrying a manatee.
So this manatee was rescued a few months ago, and after a lot of rehab, is now ready to be released again. Her name is Chorus. And they're just doing some final checks before we put her back into the water.
Chorus was rescued because she'd lost lots of weight, a result of cold water weakening her immune system and making her sick. Now she's healthy and really heavy, so she's being released in the warm waters of the power station.
The team lowers her down into the water. Then they coax her off the sheet they were carrying her on and off into the sea.
You're quite emotional. It's a very strange place to be releasing a wild animal. Your brain is going, no, surely this isn't going to be good for the animal. Don't let it go there. But that is where they're going to be safest. It is extraordinary. It's a completely unique situation.
These unlikely squatters show how animals find benefits from structures we've built. But they're only there in small numbers. Sometimes creatures are introduced to unexpected places en masse and turn out to be a serious problem. These are alien invaders.
An animated finger points to the words alien invaders.
I'm travelling south, just a few hours' drive from the manatees into the Florida Everglades to investigate a story that sounds like it's straight from a horror movie. In the last few years, hundreds of giant snakes have suddenly appeared in Florida's swamps. In 2007 alone, 250 pythons were caught, some more than 18 feet long. One's even been photographed trying to eat a fully grown alligator. What's even more bizarre is these snakes are at least 9,000 miles from their natural home. These are Burmese pythons, and they should be in Southeast Asia. And yet there could now be 100,000 of them in the Florida Everglades. I want to find out how they got here. Many people think it's down to exotic pet snakes that have escaped. Burmese pythons have always been popular as pets, but the explosion in numbers here can't be explained by a few escapees. So it's got to be something more than that. And Miami has always been a major hub for the exotic pet trade. Snakes aren't just sold here, they're bred here. I'm off to investigate. I've been given access to a secret and secure location where hundreds of snakes are housed under one roof. Sounds like Fort Knox.
Well, we keep everything locked up tight in here. We don't want anybody to get hurt.
Greg Graziani breeds snakes for the pet trade. In this secure facility, he has ball pythons, a smaller relative of the Burmese species. This is just one of around 500 large reptile breeding centres in Florida. There seems to be an awful lot of snakes in here. How many snakes have you got?
Right now, we're probably between 700 and 800. We just finished our hatching season. These are all the hatchlings. One of these racks right here holds 108 babies.
Wow. Greg believes Florida's giant python problem all hails from one much more ramshackle breeding unit more than two decades ago.
Back in 1992, there was a facility that was simply just a greenhouse with shade cloth over it. And they had these pythons in these containers, just like this, stacked up. and there was about 900 baby pythons in that facility.
At the same time, this happened. Hurricane Andrew. One of the most devastating storms ever to hit the United States. Winds of up to 175 miles an hour wiped out much of southern Florida, including the python breeding unit.
When the hurricane went through, the facility itself was gone. They couldn't find a single snake. And the thought process at the time with Fish and Wildlife was, well, they died in the hurricane. But nobody realized what a perfect little protective container this is in a windstorm. It's basically a Frisbee. This could go anywhere from a couple of miles to 100 miles in the wind.
If you wanted to disperse thousands of snakes into the environment, you know, a massive great big storm and then a container like this would be ideal. You couldn't have designed it better,
no,
could you?
Snakes escape, have people let them loose? Of course. But when I weigh the actual data, 900 snakes on one day being injected into the Florida Everglades versus years and years of just a pet release here or there making it to the Glades, I mean, I don't see how it could be anything else.
Boxes of snakes.
An alien invasion that happened almost overnight, and it even involved flying saucers. It turns out the subtropical conditions in Florida are perfect for pythons. Burmese pythons are ambush predators. They grab prey with their sharp teeth and then crush them. Their sudden arrival in the Everglades has caught the local wildlife off guard. A few endangered species are even being pushed to the brink of extinction. But why are such giant snakes proving so difficult to stop? Well, apparently, these stealthy hunters are masters of staying hidden. I want to see just how difficult it is to find them. So a 13-foot wild-caught python has been released in a secure 5-acre site. And I've got to track it down. But I have some assistance. Ruben Ramirez, a champion python hunter. He's caught over 100 wild pythons. Can you teach anybody? Can anybody learn?
Yes, absolutely. Anybody can learn.
Really?
Yeah.
There's no special skills required? I find that hard to believe.
You gotta focus.
A python in the grass.
I try to become an actual python or snake itself. Where would it hide? Where would it be? I get into a zone.
I reckon if anybody can teach me, Ruben, you can.
<We'll do it. laughs>
Just make sure I come back with all my fingers, please. Yeah.
The reason these snakes are so hard to find, even in this small area, is down to their brilliant camouflage.
It could be anywhere.
Exactly.
It
could be anywhere.
A glimpse of python amidst the grass. Ruben moves vegetation with a long pole.
See, this is perfect for them to be in right here. Look, there it is.
Oh!
Come here.
Look. No way!
Look at his head right here.
He grabs hold of its tail and pulls it out of hiding while Lucy hops about behind him.
Come. Here, hold the tail.
Hold the tail?
Hold the tail. Hold it as
Seriously?
Hard as you can.
Seriously?
Yeah, drum.
Oh, my God. Oh, my word.
Ruben grabs the head. Ruben kneels down and holds out his hand for a high five.
High five. Oh, my God.
There it is.
This must weigh, like, how much? Same as me, I'm thinking.
This one. Oh, grab it.
Yeah.
Let's go. Oh, feel the weight. What? You tell me.
It's just really heavy. Oh! other than you, they don't have a natural predator. You are the predator. Yeah, they've arrived on this scene here. And there's nothing that eats them, basically.
At this size, there's no natural predator for them.
Yeah, other than you.
Other than me, right.
Yeah. Look, I'm actually being constricted.
Yeah?
That's a unique experience.
You feel the strength?
Yeah, I can really feel the strength on that. Wow. Anyway, thank God that's just my wrist and not my neck. That's all I can say. The python's crushing coils and camouflage have allowed this alien invader to conquer the Everglades. The final twist in this serpent's tale is that in their native Southeast Asia, Burmese pythons are increasingly endangered. Whilst here in Florida, they're thriving. Across the world, we're transporting animals to new lands, and many are wreaking havoc. Huge and toxic cane toads are marching their way across Australia, poisoning native animals en route. And feral goats have been munching their way through the Galapagos Islands, leaving the endangered giant tortoises without shade and water. Finally, I'm heading closer to home, to southern France, on the trail of one of the smallest, but actually the scariest invaders of all.
A hornet's head.
Asian hornets. Large, highly aggressive wasps that swarm together to defend their nests. They've killed 6 people in France in recent years. So unlike France's native hornet, Asian hornet nests have to be destroyed.
Ready.
I'm joining Manu Martinez, a pest controller who's about to stir up a hornet's nest. They're famously aggressive. I've got on a really fully protective suit, but I'm still a bit nervous. A nest can grow as large as a rubbish bin and hold more than 1,000 hornets. Okay, bonne chance, Manu!
Merci.
When disturbed, they vigorously defend their nest.
Manu sprays the nest.
They're attacking his hands right now. Too stressful, even down here. So stressful, in fact, I've steamed up my suit. They're spitting venom in his eyes. Oh my God, this is just terrifying. This is the nest coming down, and I've been told it's still very active. I'm holding in my hand thousands of angry hornets in their nest. Oh! Oh my God! I'll be happy never to have to handle another Asian hornet's nest in my life. But for Manu, there are now so many of these foreign hornets in this part of France, he's busy risking his life most nights. So, how did Asian hornets come to be in France? They arrived accidentally in a consignment of plant pots from China 10 years ago and have spread across Europe at an alarming pace. But the real threat from these hornets isn't just to us. Asian hornets hunt one of our most vital and commercially important insects. Honeybees. And they do it in a gruesomely efficient way.
Lucy's crouching near a line of hives.
The hornets hover outside the hive, waiting to pick off tired bees as they return from foraging. He caught one mid-air! That's extraordinary! That is an incredible act of predation. Once they catch a bee, they use their powerful jaws to rip their heads off. The hornets then fly the headless bee bodies back to their nests to feed to their young. European bees have no effective defence to this,
so just a few Asian hornets can polish off hundreds of them in a few hours. It could be the last straw for bee populations already in crisis. And with honeybees worth billions of pounds to the European economy, this invasion of foreign hornets is coming at a great cost. And their next stop could be the UK.
A headline, Be Afraid.
The Asian hornet is every bee's nightmare. And the fact that it would only take a single fertilised queen to create such a devastating effect in the UK is a chilling example of how even the smallest of stowaways can have a massive impact on the delicate balance of nature. On my journey, I've met some truly unexpected animals and been amazed at how nature is responding to the ways we humans are changing the world. It's been really fascinating to see how, when you take an animal out of its natural home and place it somewhere different, it behaves differently. It's almost a different animal. Escape artists like Colombia's amorous hippos and Germany's light-fingered raccoons show how animals are adapting their natural skills to thrive in completely new places. Our towns and cities are taking things one step further. They're actually physically changing the animals that are turning up on our doorsteps. The coy wolves in New York and the bears are showing that we're not just reshaping the planet, but also the animals on it. We're fast-tracking evolution. And whilst there's no doubt our actions come at huge cost for many creatures, it's been incredible to see how some animals have found refuge in the most unexpected human situations. I've been genuinely surprised and actually quite heartened by animals' extraordinary ability to adapt to this new world. Nowadays, animals are more and more likely to crop up unexpectedly in our human world, heralding a new and curiously unnatural history.
The New York skyline at night.